Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I am Rob Pannier from the Minor League Sports Report, joined by my good buddy Kevin Lucco from the 10th Inning Stretch. And this week we have the honor of Jack Michaels, the voice of the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. Jack, welcome to the show.
Rob and Kevin, it's good to be on your show. And first of all, I'm glad that you have this to promote the American Association. And it's good to finally be on it. Here we are, the Redhawks about 20 games deep into the season, a fifth of the way through. Summer's finally hit at some ballparks, and I feel like we're just getting going, man. But thanks for having me on tonight.
Well, before we jump too much into talking about the league, we first of all want to talk a little bit about you, Jack. North Dakota's Broadcaster of the Year. That's pretty awesome.
Well, thank you. That's I didn't even know I belonged to any kind of association to win the award. So yeah, I've been broadcasting for 26 years, and I found out on Twitter that I was a finalist, and I went, I'm a finalist. I didn't even know I was up in the running, but yes, I'm very flattered by my colleagues and the people in the state to vote me as the Sportscaster of the Year, and at the end of the month, the kind of neat thing about that is they have a big banquet for all the state's winners, and they bring in some of the national winners, so coming up here in the end of June, I get a chance to take my daughters down to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and some of the national winners will be good, and I don't know if Doris Burke is there, but it'd be good to get them to kind of rub elbows with the female, you know, some pioneers that broadcast, and the Tony Kornheisers, I think, will be there. So I'm kind of tickled pink. I get a chance to go down and visit some of the guys who used to play for the Redhawks years ago that live in South Carolina. So I tell you, Robbie, Kev, I'm gonna take advantage of the trip at the end of the month. Yeah, the banquet's gonna be nice, but I'm gonna be all over. I'm gonna be from Lexington, South Carolina, visiting Brian Jeffcoat, who played for the Hawks, a decade ago, and some other people. So I'm excited for that part of the country.
So is that going to be like a national thing where winners from throughout the country are all going to kind of converge there?
Yeah, it's. I don't think it's like La Cosa Nostra when they all met in Appalachia, when the gang members all met back in the... Oh, wait, I was just watching that on True Crime the other day. Yeah, this is just a culmination of a bunch of the winners from each state, which is kind of cool. You get to kind of share some thoughts with the play-by-play guy from Hawaii, you know, the state winner and sure. All that stuff. I'm excited for that, and to tell about, you know, the state that I live in North Dakota, it has a lot to offer, so I'm excited about that.
You know, I have to tell you that I learned something new about you late last year that I didn't realize, that Jack Michaels isn't even your real name.
Yeah, it's not my God-given name. If I said my real name in Pig Latin, it'd be Octe Art Clay, so you can figure out that is, but... Like 27 years ago, I was doing mornings on a rock radio station, and my morning partner, whose name was Tina Renee, not her real name either, guys, came over from Minneapolis. I think she was working at a rock station in Minneapolis, and we're about to hit the air, and she said, "What name are you going to use?" And I said, "What do you mean? I use the name that Mama gave me, you know?" And she goes, "You can't use that. These people get a hold of your real name, and it's a rock station. We have some kind of suspect listeners. They might get a, you don't want that. Let's just use a name, you know." So we came up with, I said, "Well, what do you think? Like, how about Michael Toss?" She goes, "Yeah, that's not too, that's a little feminine for our rock group genre. That sounds like some, it doesn't fit well with Judas Priest music coming through the radio." So we started fooling around, and we said, how about Jack? That's a good firm. How about Michael? That's a cool name. And, you know, once, yeah, that's your name, and it literally is. I rarely hear my children every once in a while, but I rarely hear it. It's been Jack. Or worse, depending on who you're talking to, but it's been Jack.
You know, I'm going to throw a plug in for our colleague, Sean Aronson. If you folks listening haven't listened, Jack was featured on Voice Behind the Voice with Sean Aronson, one of his, I think it was probably one of his first, 10 or 12 episodes he had you on, and it was a really good listen, so anyone out there wants to hear that.
Yeah, and I encourage, you know, first of all, I'm glad you brought up Sean, because that piece that he does, I'm like you guys, Kevin or Rob, I look for that, and it's just a great listen and view, and the way Sean approaches it in a casual way, sitting in a couch, kind of tells a little bit of the front story, and then gets into the interview. And the people that he's sat down and interviewed, and I've been lucky enough to be on some of the early ones, I think I dig that. I like what Sean has done. I'm so glad he got a chance to call a no-hitter the other day with Eddie Medina and St. Paul. But, yeah, Sean and I, we dug deep into my past and some of the relations. It's strange being from North Dakota because I've been able to broadcast for different schools and colleges and went to high school with Virgil Hill, who's a dear friend, and then Fayette, and he becomes a light heavyweight champion of the world. And I'm from the same city that Phil Jackson, you know, grew up in, and he went on to coach the Chicago Bulls. And it's just, you know, I live in the town where Roger Maris is from, and, you know, he went on and did some things. And we just kind of talked background. Bismarck, North Dakota, I've lived there for 5 years, and we touched on that. And then my longtime broadcast partner, Scott Miller, who, as you know, lost his battle with cancer, and we talked about that and the relationship that Scott and I had. And it was really fun to sit down with Sean and just kind of bear your soul a little bit and talk about your history and how I got the Red Hawks job, which was an odd, how I this team that when it was Fargo-Moorhead didn't have baseball for 3.5 decades. They had the Fargo-Moorhead Twins, speaking of Roger Maris. It was the FM Twins, and they played at a stadium called Barnett Field, and it's in North Fargo where Fargo North High School is, and now where the Redhawks play, Newman Outdoor Field, is kitty corner for that. You could see where Fargo North High School is. So they didn't have baseball for 3.5 decades, and in 1995, when it started swirling around that we were going to get a team, our company, the guy, the group, Otter Tail Power, that owned our company, their CEO, Bruce Thome, was the mover and shaker, and he became part of this ownership group. And long story short, I was doing sports for Bruce in the radio station. And in the middle of a sports show, Bruce called me and said, I want you to meet me at the mall at the Granarys restaurant. And it's the fall of 95 and it's raining. I said, well, I'm doing a sports show. I can't just leave my sports show. It's your station. And he goes, just have Bob Harris do it. Bob was my producer. And I went, Bob, I'm out of here. I got to go meet the owner. I don't know why, but I'm leaving. And I met him on a rainy night outside the mall in Fargo in 1995. And our owner, Bruce Thome, said, hey, buddy, I've got two guys in here that I want to hire for this new team we're having, this baseball team. I just want you to come in and talk baseball and tell them how nice it is in Fargo-Moorhead and how great this is. And I said, okay. And I walked into that restaurant, and sitting at this table, two guys I didn't know, one was named Doug Simonick, and the other was a former World Series champion with the Minnesota Twins, Jeff Bittiger. And I sat on that table, and about 2.5 hours later, in the middle of this night, I watched Bruce Thome sign a contract hiring the manager, the new manager for the new team, Doug Simonick, and a pitching coach, Jeff Bittiger, and they did it on a beer-stained napkin that night. That's how the Red Hawks started hiring, and then the rest, and then they were looking for a guy, the John Dietrich, who's a baseball gypsy that's been everywhere, and he started.
Great guy.
Been a great, ambassador to the game, very good, great hire out of the gate. And John Dietrich called me and said, Jack, I heard you're really good on the mic, or you have a good voice, or would you like to do the public address announcing for the new team? And I said, well, to be honest with you, John, I'd like to be the play-by-play voice of the baseball team. He goes, oh, well, why don't you bring me over a sound check? Well, the only thing that I had done is a couple of Legion Baseball World Series. And I went home, and the future mother of my children, we had a house in South Fargo, and I came home, and I went downstairs in our basement, and I watched the Seattle-Cleveland, I want to say, pennant race, turned the sound down, recorded 3 innings of play-by-play, went back to the studio, put crowd noise on it, and gave that on a cassette tape to John Dietrich. He listened for like 30 seconds and went, okay, that's what we're looking for. You got the job. That's how I got the Red Hawk job.
That is awesome, Jack. You know, I have to tell you, one of the most enjoyable parts I have in listening to your broadcast is kind of the, you know, baseball is one of those kind of sports that you just can't talk about the game the whole time because there's a lot of fill-in space, and the way that you fill in games is really awesome. Tell us a little bit about how you have come to choose topics, or, you know, what's the Jack Michael style kind of thing?
It's funny because it's so many, you're right, because baseball, people say, what sport do you like best? And I have the privilege of doing college football in the Big Sky Conference for the University of North Dakota, and I broadcast for North Dakota in basketball and football. But you're right, baseball has this way that I never want to, confuse a listener by using terminology that might be, that my mother wouldn't understand. My mom's 86. You know, I wouldn't want to use anything where she wouldn't And I want to have it such a conversation where I try to engage you. If you're going to spend the time to listen, I would like to engage you into, making it all feel good and then wrap that around the game. So, and maybe it stemmed when Maury Wills, my longtime broadcast partner, he never knew what the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon was. I don't even technically know the rules of that. I'm surrounded by my daughters and their college friends here, but it was the theory, right, is that we're all separated by 6 degrees. And I brought this up one night on the air with Maury. And I knew that Maury had done things. He wasn't a political guy, but I knew that he was on Ronald Reagan's drug say no task force. I knew that he was friends with the Kennedys. And out of the blue one time, I was doing a game and Maury was doing color, and it was one of those parts where you would fill it. And it was a typical thing, like, oh, here's the 2-1 pitch, it's high and away, 3 balls in a strike. And I said, Maury, do you realize you're 2 degrees separated from the Ayatollah Khomeini? And Maury, in true Will's fashion, what's that, Jack? And I said, oh, you're familiar with. And I started going through the degrees with his relationship with Reagan and da-da-da-da. And then I didn't get the game, Jack, so I kept going on. I said, well, like me, through you, I'm 2 degrees separated from Sandy Koufax. Oh, I get it, Jack. So then I realized, I got feedback on that, and people liked that engagement outside of, here's a 3-1 pitch, ground ball to second, fielded on the first, there's out number two. Yeah, Maury, remember, and you start getting, so now I don't have Maury. He's retired, living in Sedona, Arizona. So I think it's my way of being rhetorical at times, and you can even do that during the course of a game. Hey, there's Ron Pineras on first. I wonder if he's going to try to steal. Here's the 0-1 pitch. Ron, off these stays. And I found a way to broadcast that tries to engage you one-on-one with me, and I think it makes it pleasing for a listener. But I broadcast every game thinking my mother's listening, and she's the only one. And if I do that and I make, that work, then I know that I've probably done okay for everybody listening.
Wow. I have to tell you, I watched a few weeks ago, they had old episodes of Johnny Carson on, and he had Bob Uecker on. And,
oh, my goodness.
And I was laughing at his comments about, it was just before spring training, the year after the strike had occurred. And so Carson was asking him if he had to kind of prep himself for spring training, and Bob Uecker just out of nowhere is just like, strike three, and he's like, I have to kind of prep myself. So do you have to do that kind of stuff heading into the season, kind of get yourself worked up in the baseball mode?
Yeah, that's right. Well, there's a little thing you have. It's funny. My trip to the park is always the great mental part. Just come on, look what we do for a living, and look what we get to be a part of. How do you not love that? So my trip, my drive to the park, or on the bus to the stadium, setting up gear, that's my mental moment of the clarity of, wow, I'm not on a telephone pole fixing lights, and I'm in this job, if you call it that. So that's my moment of clarity, that the appreciation of doing what we're doing. And then, as the game gets going, you have little things like my mentor's name is Lee Halverson. I was baptized hard into broadcasting. I was just sitting watching him do play by play, and he got laryngitis during a state tournament, said, okay, you're on. And that's how I got my start. So
wow.
That was my baptism into play-by-play. But he used to have a strikeout call, and he would sit at Williston's Legion Baseball Park in Williston, North Dakota. And he was so loud, he had this booming voice. And if you were, Kevin, if you were batting and you struck out, he didn't mean anything by it, but he had this, struck him out. And you just felt like, oh, my Lord, you don't have to be so loud. But I do things that get
tribute. Well, that's where you got that from.
Yeah, that's where I got that from. It's a tribute to my mentor. And I do that with my basketball play-by-play. He has certain basket counts, whistle, and a foul. He has a certain way of doing that. So it's my tribute to him every now and then. I don't do it all the time, but it's I don't know what he would do. Michael Tamburino, who pitches with us, and if you guys watched any of the cast, his parents own that delicatessen in Long Island. And I started getting into a thing, and normally my mind would work well enough to find these things, but I wanted to name each pitch Tamburino had after a sandwich in his parents' delicatessen. And I haven't quite I haven't quite figured out. All I got is the strikeout I called at Knackwurst. But anyway, my mind is filled with ways to entertain that way.
That is awesome. An interesting note about you, I think, that maybe kind of people may not understand or know about you is the fact that you have quite a severe allergies to a lot of foods. And so I've got to see that you've basically down to a hamburger with a piece of bread once in a while for dinner.
Rob, you probably saved my life without even knowing it half the time. Yeah, try going through life not being able to eat spice or tomato, ketchup, taco, lasagna, pizza, Doritos, habanero, any kind of pepper, any kind of... my life is so bland. It is, if my girls and I went out for dinner, their plates would look exact opposite. Mine would look like a Davenport without couches on it or pillows, and theirs would be full of red, white, and blue peacocks, for goodness sakes. I'm very bland.
Jack, I'm in the third season of doing this show with Rob. I'm kind of his right-hand man.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife has never made any food for me.
Oh, yeah.
So I heard about that. I had a little bone to pick with Rob there.
Yeah. I go through withdrawals from Rob's wife's food. That's a great call. I'm thinking I must have done something good in a past life to get that treatment. That was a good. And I felt bad I couldn't clean the Tupperware out or whatever else. But Rob said, no, we got that.
Well, there's a reason that Rob is 25 pounds overweight, and his wife went to culinary arts school, and that's the reason. So that will explain it right off. Well, Jack,
food is so good, guys. I know we'll move on, but it's funny. Speaking of Wills, one thing Maury might have been able to be one of the greatest baseball players and base dealers. He broke Ty Cobb's mark, and he was the MVP in 1962, and he won the Hickok Belt. But we used to eat so much. He used to eat so much between the inning breaks. You only have 60 seconds, and hopefully I can say this on the broadcast tonight. But we used to eat bags of peanuts in between innings, which I wouldn't recommend to any broadcaster. And we were coming back from a break early, and I heard the bumper music, and I threw this bag of peanuts underneath my seat, and I sat, and you heard the crack as we were going over the air. And Maury heard this sound, but he didn't know what it was. And he said, "What's that, Jack? What happened, Jack?" And I said, "I think I just crushed my peanuts." And if you don't articulate the word, you get where I'm going. And since we were on food, I thought I'd tell you a food happening.
Oh, man. I don't even want to talk about baseball anymore. I could listen to these stories for hours, to be honest.
Well, that's
for
sure, everyone. Tune in next week.
Glad you guys called to talk about baseball. Anyway, what was your question?
Well, let's jump into the American Association this week. We want to begin by talking about pitcher and player of the week and month. Pitcher of the month was obviously Eddie Medina. After going 3-0, pitching a no-hitter against Cleburne, then we have a player of the month with Chase Simpson for the second year in a row was chosen in the month of May by us here at This Week in the Association of Minor League Sports Report. Jack, you've got kind of a chance to see both these guys over the last couple of years. What are your thoughts about Medina and Simpson?
Well, I tell you, from what I know about Eddie, it's a great story. And I saw Eddie's opening day start. And I don't even think Medina was fully healthy. I think he had a touch of the flu, or he wasn't 100%, and he gave up a four spot in that first game. I believe they were playing Milwaukee, and Milwaukee put up four, and then Eddie wouldn't be in Eddie Medina, and he started shutting him down. And then what he did the other night was just incredible against Cleburne on two fronts. Number one, his ability, because he's got the pitch, he's got the command, and he just has the knowledge. But at Cleburne's ballpark, at the depot at Cleburne Station in Texas, that turf is quick, and it's hard for me to believe that someone got a no-hitter there, because it seems like anything hit scoots through that infield, and you've got to get there. Walk has to be involved, and I know he made a couple of plays, so I'm just a big fan of Eddie Medina. He's the one guy, when the Redhawks play the Saints, I quickly look at the rotation and go, okay, are we going to get Medina? Because it's going to be tough. So I'm a huge fan of Eddie. The no-hitter couldn't happen to a nicer guy. The second one, I believe, in Saints history, I think, Rob, I read in Kevin on yes. that. But, yeah, big fan of Eddie Medina, and he's off to a great start, and good for him. Good for him.
I think you're going to get him on Thursday, by the way.
Yeah, is that right? Okay, thanks for the warning. On Thursday. Yeah, we have a Wednesday day game in St. Paul's next week, and then a Thursday night game. So, and the ball jumps out of there, and I'm curious because I love the lineup the Red Hawks have, and this is going to be a great, great challenge. They're a good club, the North Division stuff. But you mentioned Chase Simpson. Chase Simpson, my goodness. It is, he's the guy that opposing managers say, this is our guy that we can't let him beat us. And we tried to, the Red Hawks tried to, be careful with Chase, on the trip down south. And lo and behold, he knocks the ball over the center field wall. And it might have cleared the batter's eye. And he did that left-handed. And he's got that power right-handed too. And he's just, he's a tough out. He's great for this league. He challenges others to rise to their level of game, and you can't deny the numbers. I mean, this guy has belted, 8 home runs, I think, already, and he's on pace. 24 RBIs, and how many games has Cleburne played? I mean, it's, 19, 20?
20,
So he's on pace for well over 100 RBIs, so he's a player. It's, you shake your head and scratch your head sometimes like guys are still in this league, and he would be one of them.
Yeah, and you look at it, he's got a lot more protection in the lineup this year than he did last year. So when you consider the numbers he put up last season, you can just imagine what he'll do if he is actually in Cleburne for the entire season.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And the park plays well for him. He hits the ball hard. He barrels up everything. And at home, it plays well. And, yeah, that's good. And, Cody Regis is another guy. Just got done seeing and that. I don't think he's an alien like Mike Trout, but I'll tell you what, it's hard to keep him off the base pass too. That's another good bat in this league.
We actually had a co-pitcher of the month here because Luke Westfall has been ridiculous down there in Chicago. 4 hits in the first 23.2 innings pitched this guy has had this season.
Yeah, that's another thing. And how about what those dogs have been able to do? That is, I'm not saying that last year you go into Chicago and think that you'd have, you should be able to take that series because Butch had guys, former big league guys and whatnot. But you found a way because maybe they didn't have a depth in pitching or maybe the rotation wasn't as strong. And then, here's Westfall. So, and then you look at what Chicago is doing. And now, again, another tough place to play. I love that field. And I love the fact that it's so close to the airport at O'Hare. It's not like these municipal airports. Fargo has an Hector International Airport, and you could see anything from a normal plane to a crop duster. Schaumburg, when they were in the Northern League, they had that little airport, and you'd see a little, little twin engine. At Rosemont, at Impact Field, you're getting like Air France flying in from the outfield. And I love that. And we go to Chicago soon, too, so I'm looking forward to get back to there next weekend.
I wonder what kind of odds I would have got in Vegas if there was actually American Association gambling allowed, where I would have said at this time, before the season started, that Sioux Falls and Chicago would be your first place ball clubs.
Amazing. You nailed it. And for the Canaries, and again, you look at the manager there, and Mike has done, they have a good place, but it's another, I scratch my head. Fargo-Moorhead, people in this area think Fargo-Moorhead and Sioux Falls are like sister cities. They have, similar population, similar passion for their sports. And poor Sioux Falls, it got that quirky ballpark with all the different nooks and crannies. And they've been around for so long, but they don't draw well. And here, I hope the people in Sioux Falls, I know there's talk about building a stadium in a different location, and maybe that will help, and maybe it will. But I firmly believe that you shouldn't have to move and develop new stadiums to get fan bases to come out and appreciate what you're doing. And for what Sioux Falls is doing, I hope that their community recognizes because they, they just haven't had teams that were strong or contended consistently. No, you nailed it. Being in first place, and albeit by what, maybe a half game over Lincoln. But hey, go get them. And we played so long with Sioux Falls in our division in the North Division, in the Northern League in the same division, same thing in the American Association, but now in the other division, I look down there and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, Sioux Falls, look at that. They're 18, 19 games deep, and they've won three or four straight, so good for them.
Yeah, all those so-called experts had Kansas City, Cleburne, Sioux City racing for those top two playoff spots, and maybe that's how it'll end up later on, but right now it is kind of neat to see Lincoln and Sioux Falls playing as well as they've been.
Yeah, it is. And for Kansas City, you know, when the Red Hawks opened up with KC, and what you saw right out of the day was Randall Delgado, I want to say, big league time, and then saw Eric Stout in that series, and then the Omaha Lincoln, the closer came in, and I'm thinking, my goodness, just like big leaguer, big leaguer, big leaguer. And he got a decent enough bat or two that could get in there. And then, of course, what happens, you get some of those guys that got signed by either the, I think, Boston picked up, what, Stout and some of that. But, yeah, they were, so Kansas City has given back, but they've been depleted. My guess is they're going to reload. But I'm with you. I would have taken Kansas City. I would say Lincoln, that's going to be in the ballpark. They've got a lamp that could put up 10 runs in the drop of a hat. And, you know, in Sioux City with, what, 71 wins, guys, last year? Longo's going to get
a lot
that,
of guys returning.
Yeah, and then a lot of the familiar names. So, Mago should get that going. You know, he's a pitcher by trade, pitching coach. He'll shore that up. And I just hope he waits till after this Sunday. But I hope that he'll shore that up.
Well, let's start out by talking about the North Division here. And a point that Kevin had brought up to me before we got on underway for today is the fact that the top six teams in pitching this year are all in the North Division so far.
Yeah, they're not just, you know, starters. It's this, you know, guys coming out of the pen and lights out. And you know, Winnipeg is finding ways to win games late, and then they still have Victor Capion, you know. And Capion just, it seems like the game is, I know the old nickname for him is Victory Capion, meaning game's over when he comes in. And that's going good. And St. Paul, we've talked about Eddie Medina and what George has there in St. Paul. You mentioned Westfall in Chicago. Gary Southshore, if you're not going to see consistently the same arms, you're going to see a lot of arms that are fresh that batters a lot of times don't have more than one look during the course of a game, because Greg's going to, you know, he's going to rotate that up, and it's going to be different, and that's always tough, especially in that ballpark if you're at the Steelyard where it seems like there's a giant force field. So you might have a team that has a Chris Jacobs and Leopoldo Pena or Cody Regis, you're not getting out of the Steelyard, so they can pitch to that park. Yeah, it's the North is, it's a shame that only two get a go, because I would think, just projecting here, that it is going to be a dogfight between at least three, if not four, and maybe even five by the time we're three-quarters of the way through.
Yeah, I'd go as far as to say five.
That wouldn't shock me.
Well, moving on to the St. Paul Saints specifically, we've talked a little bit about Eddie Medina earning the no-hitter and was also chosen as Pitcher of the Week by us. But the interesting thing was the team is really not hitting consistently at this particular point, especially with their group of four infielders. And, Kevin, that's kind of a surprise because we were really expecting more out of this group.
Yeah, I know our colleague Sean Aronson was expecting Chesney Young, guy that just was AAA last year with the Cubs, to be a 330 hitter, and right now he is struggling. I believe he is hitting around 150. Joey Wong, who was not just a really good fielder, but also a pretty decent bat last year in 272, is hitting around 216. Josh Allen's at 225, so... And Brady Shoemaker's around 263. So the guys that you're pretty much your infield isn't hitting on all cylinders right now. But with the way they've been pitching with the team ERA at 2.46, the pitching's been holding them in games. But there's just, they got a good record now, but you got to think that they've left a couple wins on the table by having these games that are well pitched, but the bats just couldn't get going.
I did want to bring up. Go ahead, Jack.
Well, I was thinking that too. You know, you mentioned all those names, and I'm thinking, my goodness, you know, you're talking about Josh Allen, you know, you're talking about the Shoemaker, you know, Joey Wong is this swung it well. All those names you just mentioned that were good. And then I go down to runs, and I look at runs, and granted, Sioux Falls is, that's a run-producing type stadium. You know, they've scored over 100 runs. The Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks have scored 114 runs and are, still 2.5 out of first place here. And look at St. Paul that's playing well. Right now, they haven't been able to your point, Kev, right now they haven't needed at times to put up a ton of runs to win. So the fear, if you're not named St. Paul, is that when all those names you just mentioned start clicking, and it's so contagious with that team, and you blend in that pitching, you could see them actually slingshot. You know, my thought is somewhere halfway through this, the first part of the season or midway, and that's the frightening thing about the Saints.
The interesting thing about this is that they haven't even made any moves yet at this point in the season.
Right. Yeah, go figure. It's odd. You know, back in the day, speaking of Simi, and by the way, the Redhawks have a terrific manager in Jim Bennett, and I love that. But Simi used to pride himself on going wire to wire back in the day. Not easily done. And I don't think he probably can do it. And now, it's injuries because the season's so bunched. You play 100 games and, you know, 110 days, the travel. We just got off a 17-hour bus ride, you know, a couple days ago. I just don't think going wire to wire is the way to go. It'd be good if you could, but it just doesn't happen that way. And the fact that St. Paul hasn't done a lot in that regard, yeah, that's impressive.
A guy they would probably love to have in the lineup, Dante Bichette Jr. I just wanted to mention last year's third baseman for the team was named Player of the Month for High Point in the Atlantic League this past week. So Congratulations to him. We move on to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes. Kevin Lachance has his contract purchased by the Arizona Diamondbacks. The two big stories I think we look around at them are, first of all, let's start with two big walk-off victories against the Sioux City Explorers this season. Just happened a couple of days ago where they came back from two down. I think they were down quite a bit in the first game that they battled back on. Just a team that just no matter what, you just can't go to sleep on Winnipeg.
No, and if I can jump on that, having just been, being in Fargo-Moorhead, that is the natural rival and seen called so many games with these two teams. And I was monitoring that game. I think it was Picchiello that hit the walk-off the other night. I was monitoring as I was calling a Redhawks game, and I'm like, oh, 2-0 Sioux City. They're going to the ninth inning. And the next thing you look up, Winnipeg's got first and second one out. Now the bases are loaded. Now there's a base hit. Now there's a bases loaded, two outs. Now there's the walk-off. And, you know, Corey Provost and I do a weekly show. He does the play-by-play for the Twins, and I know things are going well for Minnesota now, but we used to talk in recent years about a team's record in one-run games, and the Cleveland Indians had I don't know what it was a couple of years back, but it was remarkable, and Twins was not. And you start looking at win-losses in one-run games, and you quickly decipher, you know, what teams go to the playoffs. And teams like Winnipeg, certainly at home, as you guys know, they just find a way. I don't know if it's that Canadian air or whatever that is. Or maybe it's the bunch of pierogies that they're serving. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a hard home plate area where the balls pop off that plate or whatever it is. They've got that weird magic at Shaw Park. It doesn't shock me.
You know, Kevin.
Well, you know what's shocking me though is I was checking out some box scores from earlier this week, and as well as Winnipeg's playing, they're not capturing the city of Winnipeg thus far this year. There's been a couple games this week where they drew 2,500, and the weather's actually been pretty decent up there. So, not quite sure what's going on up there with that.
Yeah, I don't know either, and And I should know how long they go to school in southern Manitoba. You know, that's always the thing. You look at school. Minnesota goes longer than North Dakota. I'm not sure, the CFL hasn't fully started yet. They're getting into maybe some exhibition. They're not in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, so the Winnipeg Jets are home. I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. Or maybe they've been, they've won back-to-back titles in recent years, so it can be the lack of winning. Maybe they didn't have the year they obviously wanted to recently, but they don't seem to be fickle fans, but who knows? Yeah, it's a good point.
I was talking to my friend Craig Kuhlman up there, and I guess school does go into June a bit, but he said like the last month they pretty much don't, as he put it, they don't seem to do much but go on field trips. So yeah, it just puzzles me that the fans aren't flocking to Shaw Park.
You know, Go ahead, Jack. I was going to say that the thing that kind of interests me about where Winnipeg is at this season is that even Abercrombie and Josh Romanski really haven't been hitting like we've become accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, Reggie was part of that comeback the other day, but you're right. And it's amazing how Abercrombie, though, is still Reggie Abercrombie at times. And maybe there's more holes in that swing. Maybe people are learning how to spin that ball away where Reggie's not getting it anymore. But he finds a way. I don't know. Those school day games, ours got rained out, which is unfortunate because there's nothing like hearing the theme to SpongeBob SquarePants.
Oh, my goodness. And who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out? That's another. And now the kids are so good. Now you drop some Ariana Grande or the Jonas Brothers, I think, are making a comeback. I don't know if they ever left. And now the kids are so engaged. I actually look forward to it. Kids game. It's a different ambiance, but yeah, that's ours got rained out, so that was tough.
Jack, I call it the Rainbow Coalition game because you get all these patches of colors in the stands of kids all wearing the same colored shirts, and it's just a patch of orange, green, purple, yellow.
Thank goodness for the long extended invisible netting because of the school day games. God bless them. I'd say 0.5% could tell you what the score was because nobody's watching. They're all watching each other. They should be. They're out of school. They don't want to probably watch baseball. But yeah, it's. We had a game in El Paso when El Paso was in the league, and it was they let every school out of El Paso, and there must have been 6,000 kids there, and it sounded like a swarm of hornets. And my goodness gracious, it was the oddest ambiance in the world. But school day game, gotta love it.
Yeah, you find the more renowned beer vendors on those days. They're not selling beer; they're selling cotton candy and licorice and whatever.
The beer vendors are having good sales during a school day game. That's going to be a problem. Probably going to be a problem.
You know, I have to tell you, actually, Jack, you've come a long way from Judas Priest to SpongeBob. So I just want to throw that out at you right now. So, Jack, let's talk about those Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks. How is Jim Bennett fitting in with the team?
Well, he's a pleasant man. He really is. And I think, and the fact that his son ended up with the Redhawks is kind of a neat thing this year with having TJ Bennett on the team. But Jim is such a baseball guy. I've learned more because I sit by Jim on the bus trips, and we've had some long ones already. And number one, he's a big faith-based guy. You know, he comes from good stock. I've never heard the guy curse, even though he's been thrown out. It's amazing. He got thrown out the other day on a suspect call, and I got in the clubhouse afterwards, and our big first baseman, Chris Jacobs, who was listening to all of it, and he said, "Jack, you know the amazing thing? He raised his voice. Not one profanity." I said, that is unique for me. But Jim Bennett is a guy who grew up in California, Orange County. And when he was a child, he would, big fan of the Angels, and he would sneak as a young 12 or 13-year-old boy because he knew where the visiting team's hotel was and look at all, you know, Billy Martin coming in and all the Yankees, and that's what he would do. And then he got a job as a vendor at Angels Stadium at a young age. And, you know, he was serving sodas, and as he said, you know, we all wanted to get to gravitate to be the peanut vendor, you know, because those were the big guys throwing the peanuts. But he goes, "The only reason I wanted to do that was so I could be around the ballpark, could be around the guys." So this is then, and of course, he went on and, you know, pitching coach, or, you know, he's working with the pitchers in Angels spring training, and you know, he's been with the Rockies, he's been in Canada, he's been in all over the place, and obviously Salt Lake, and he has he's a thinker. And if you ask him a question, and maybe you can have him on one day in the show, it would be awesome. He just, he listens to your question, soaks it in, and comes back with a response. He's not a quick reactionary guy. And I think that's what makes him such a good pitching coach. And he really is. He's learning the league. He and Chris Coast have worked well together. Anthony Renz, another bench coach of ours, it really is nice having Jim. I've enjoyed having Jim Bennett here. And like I said, his son TJ is identical to him. And, you know, it's really, I'm happy for Jim, and I hope he can win.
I got to tell you, I'm a little surprised that the team is not playing with a better record. And I know 10-8 is good. You know, you're winning. But, I mean, I was expecting them to be like a 65-68 win team this season.
Yeah, it is. This team, the offense is phenomenal. It's gonna go. And you asked about the Redhawks, right, guys?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and I think what put a little stoppage was losing Braden Higgins, your opening day starter. And the Diamondbacks, good for the American Association. The Diamondbacks have really been active signing guys, but losing Higgins right out of the gate. And other teams have lost players, but it really kind of shifted around the rotation. So we have an Australian named Luke Wilkins that was going to be a reliever, a bridge guy. Now he has to start on short days rest and then back to relief and then start again on 5 days rest and come back into relief. So I think until they can get the ship righted in the rotation, the back end is great. Jeff Broussard is proven and good. Joe Filomeno, who you guys know all too well.
Oh, he's great pickup.
It was really a good pickup. Nasty stuff that Joe has. And, you know, guys that Brent Jones, a right-hander that comes in that is a good man in front of Filomeno. So I think the back end is good. They've got enough bridge guys to the back end of the bullpen. The rotation took a hit with Higgins, you know, trying to keep everybody healthy. But this lineup, Glennon Metzger, you know, Tim Colwell's catching fire. Kevin Ahart's proven. Chris Jacobs hit a ball over 500 feet and beyond the other day in Cleburne. It was just remarkable. In Texas, in Grand Prairie. Leo Pena, proven. TJ Bennett getting it done. Carell Prime has been a nice sign. And then Yoshar Medina, very good shortstop that can put the bat on it. And even though they lost power with Charlie Valerio behind the plate, guys like Brian Olsen, a former Twins draft pick, and even Daniel Comstock, who was split times behind the plate. You know, Comstock hit a ball over the batter's eye at Newman Outdoor Field the other night, and Olsen hit a big three-run home run this year already, too. So I think the lineup is fine. Back into the staff is good, the pen. And once they get another rotational guy, I think you're going to see the team just get more consistent with wins.
Yeah, I think the Pena home run, the Grand Slam walk-off, is probably one of the more iconic moments of the season thus far. I was watching live as that happened against Texas a couple Sundays ago.
Yeah, the way that's set up, you know, you're going into it's a rubber game of the series, and you're thinking, boy, that's a team that you should win. But credit Lu Guangcheng, I believe, if I got that name right. By the way, I'm really working on the phonetics on that Chinese team. I love those guys. That's great. But he threw a good game. And they went into the pen, and I think he had a single, a walk, another hit. And here comes Pena. And Leo was looking at one spot. I think he knew what was coming. And there's something to be said when a guy with that kind of pop gets the pitch that he expects and doesn't miss it. And it's a walk-off grand slam home run. I don't know what's better in a game of baseball than that and get doused by Gatorade or water home plate. But Leo was a happy. That's got to be one of the – outside of being with you guys tonight after eating shrimp, that's got to be a great moment.
I hope it's better than that.
Thought and a question here. Next week, we could see a matchup between Brennan Metzger and Todd Van Stensel. Do you know the relevance of why that will be a big matchup?
Huh. That wasn't a matchup during the garbage can game, was it?
No. They both claim to be the number one Taylor Swift fan.
Well, Brett is a piece of work. Okay, I love that. Good, I'm glad I can use that to nugget for the broadcast. Thank you. Brennan is a perfect hair, you know, body that we all wish as athletes or males we probably knew we never would have, but he's got it, you know. And he, Long Beach, California kid, you know, he's got it all. He dances, he has fun with life. big Taylor Swift fan and proud to admit it. You know, he's just comfortable in his own skin. Oh, I'm looking forward to that matchup now. Yeah, that's outstanding.
And a question, last summer we were talking about Devin Ehart, and you were telling me that this was going to be his last season. And
yep.
Here he is again.
Yep. He told me it was going to be his last season. Devin Ehart is a very smart fellow. He does more homework than he does, literal homework, than he does anything else. And he school's his thing. Getting a degree, working on degrees, masters, moving, that's all Devin Ehart. Plays chess in the clubhouse, you know, reads books, you know, FaceTimes with his son Emery, you know, about reading books. So this is all Devin Ehart. So his life was going back to Detroit and get on that plane. And then he told me, boy, January hit, February hit, and as we all know, the toughest thing to do is take off that uniform and when you know you can still play. And he said, he turned to his significant other and said, I got to go back. I got to play. You know, it's not out of me yet. And she gave him and as we all know, women rule the world. He got the go-ahead. He got the green light that she allowed him to go back. And he's, and thank goodness, because he's looking as good as he did last year.
So no thoughts for the Pro Bowlers Tour for him yet.
Yeah, I mean, they're bowling, of course. Yes, nice catch right there. He could be in the PBA. It's amazing. I took him to the bowler in Fargo. Not a seedy place. It's a nice place, but there's probably not a lot of guys, not a lot of pro ball players running around there like Devin Ehart. And he picked up a ball and went out, and these guys were shooting pool with cowboy hats, sucking down beers at 2 in the afternoon on a Thursday. And they started looking at the bowling alley here in the pins crack, and Ehart bowls like a 284. And the little old lady that is probably about 107 years old behind the desk, God bless her, she comes over with this sign-up registration card to Devin and says, would you like to join one of our leagues? Devin said, I'm from Detroit. I play baseball. Oh, it was the funniest thing in the world. I gave her a big hug. I went, yeah, he's not going to be around all year. That's okay.
You know, that's even more amazing because we know they don't exactly keep the lanes well oiled in the middle of baseball season.
No. There's, yeah, right. There's usually lint, food, hamburger buns on the lane. You know, yeah, never. You know, bugs crawling all over it. Yeah, right.
Well, let's talk about those Gary South Shore Railcats for a moment. Thomas Walvaron, I guess is the way you'd say his name, leading the league in batting, which is kind of a shocker to me until Kevin pointed out before the show.
Yeah, it is. And by the way, you didn't reference Gary without using the word pesky, which is rare, right?
yeah, pretty much, yeah.
It's always the pesky rail cat.
That is the adjective.
That'd be it. And the kicker with Gary South Shore is that you guys talked about how St. Paul hasn't made a lot of moves. Well, that's the MO for Gary, you know, and it's a great thing. Young guys get a lot of opportunities. They make a lot of moves, but I've never known an organization that builds a team that fits their system. That's usually a football term for individual quarterbacks or whatever, but it fits for Gary South Shore. And, you know, they've got guys to get in that lineup that fit their system. And, you still got Willis and those boys that could swing it. Yeah, it's another team, and of course they sit in that North Division, you know, and again, maybe you're right. Maybe it is going to be five. Maybe five is the number of teams that's going to battle in the North.
I can see that.
You know, I was at a state amateur baseball tournament a couple of seasons ago. You like this story, Jack? The Moorhead Brewers had just gotten done in their hanging out watching the Midwest Nerdbirds play. They knew a lot of the guys. Talking to a friend of mine, and we brought up Greg Taggart and the Railcats, and I don't remember what former Red Hawk it was. It might have been Derek Dorman or one of the other guys. Turns around and he says, oh, you mean Gary University?
The University of Gary. Yeah. That probably was Dorman. Derek Dorman. Great utility guy. Yeah, University of Gary. We used to joke that the Bennigan's or whatever that restaurant is on the back of the concourse there at the Steel Yard in Michael Jackson's hometown we said, oh, is that where all the college kids stay? Is that like a dorm room, that restaurant over there? You know, whatever. They just come filtering out of there.
Well, the last team in the North, believe it or not, is at 10-11. The Milwaukee Milkmen, winners of 7 of their last 10, and this team is by far exceeding expectations at this point.
Manuel Boscon and the company. Yeah, the Milwaukee Milkmen. Isn't that funny how you think, oh, new team, yeah, you'll just roll over them? Nope, not really, you know, and you find out that they've done enough to fill it in, and I feel sorry that they're, you know, it's unfortunate. You mentioned attendance and some, yeah, you know, Winnipeg down a little bit and Sioux City down and whatnot. And I, you know, I look at what's happening in Kokomo, Indiana, and I'm glad they've got a place to play while their field gets complete, but it's got to be rough in front of, I think I saw 45 the other day and 70. And so, you know, they're doing kind of like what Gary did. Remember what Gary ended the old Northern League? They did not have their field wasn't built, and they played every game on the road, right? Remember that?
Yeah, Joe Calfabietta was the manager, yeah.
Yeah, Joe Calfabietta, yeah.
Yeah.
The only guy that can make that team competitive.
That's right. So to Milwaukee's credit, you know, they've got some boys doing some good things, and once they get in a comfortable feeling in their own friendly confines, I'd imagine that we're gonna see them be competitive, too, and they already are. I mean, if they were sitting in the South, they'd clearly be, they'd be maybe a couple games out. I mean, that's incredible.
I was listening to Dan Vaughn's broadcast a couple of days ago, and you could hear birds chirping in the background.
Yeah, 45 stuff. I tell young broadcasters, and sometimes I speak to college classes, that, you know, anybody can broadcast and sound pretty decent in a packed house with your signature home run call and go back and hear that tape and go, ooh, look at me. Like, wow, that's great. Track it down, Marge, and the crowd. You get into a crowd that's got about 100 people where everything you say is bouncing off an aluminum bleacher and coming back to you. You've got, you know, flies and the hornets around you or a bird chirping, and that's about the only, yeah, that's where you polish your skills. So, yeah, that's got to be tough. That's not good.
Well, let's move on to the South Division. Oh, go ahead, Kevin.
I want to get back to the Milkmen. Two guys I think that have made them go are a couple of pitchers with high AAA and major league experience with Angel Ventura and TJ House. I saw Ventura pitch on opening weekend in St. Paul, and you could tell he was kind of struggling with the really cold weather, but I watched a couple of his other starts, and he is just, you know, I was telling Dan after pitching with the T-Bones, I said, I think Ventura is going to be one of your more dominant starters in the league before it's all said and done.
And we saw TJ House, by the way, too, and that's a pitcher. You look at him and you go, okay, he's been there. He's done that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, both guys, it's almost averaged 7 innings to start so far. So
That's pretty good in this league, for sure.
Yeah, House looked good against the Red Hawks. He's looked good. Good arms. Yeah, I mentioned the catcher for them, but yeah, you're right. That's Milwaukee is. And I don't know, in this league, could you get by with a couple of good starters and, you know, and be strong up the middle and win enough games? You know, I like to think you need at least 3 good ones that you can count on, and then hopefully you catch fire with number 4 and 5 in the rotation. But, you know, they've got a couple that certainly is good enough. No question.
Kurt Hyer's been really good for them, too, with a 1.96 ERA after 4 starts. The guy that really stood out to me on opening weekend was their closer, Miles Smith. I mean, he was just filthy.
Wow. My gosh. Miles Smith, you know, we talk about the new terminology of exit velocity with bats and radar guns. There should be another category with Miles Smith. He comes in, and it's just nasty. It's nasty fast. It's funny. You know, you see the ballpark at Newman is intimate. You're going to sit close. And I wish everybody, if Miles Smith were on there, could be at that ballpark when he came in, and you get an idea of what true velocity is and what these guys are up against. It is, it's not that he's unhittable, but boy, do you have to, you have to get that bat moving and have an idea. Otherwise, he can part your hair with one pitch.
Well, let's move on to, let's move on to the South Division. And before kind of breaking down each individual team, Jack, the Redhawks have got to see a lot of the South Division teams early on. So kind of what is your take on the division overall?
I was questioning if we were allowed to play anybody in the North for a while.
Yeah, for real.
I've been spending a lot of time in Lincoln and in Texas and in Kansas City. My gosh, the guy Jake that runs the shuttle for the hotel knows my whole life story, by the way, in Kansas City. But yeah, the South is solid. Seeing the T-Bones, we talked about them losing some pieces. I'm sure they'll replace, and you know, and it's shown. They've won 3 of their last 10, so that's the result of losing some bodies, obviously. Lincoln, when you look at what Lincoln has, and just got done seeing Lincoln, and Randolph Odover is swinging it well. I mentioned Regis. He seems to barrel up most things that come his way. Kurt Smith has been, Kurt Smith is 85 years old to me. I mean, he's like, when is Kurt Smith going to finally retire? He had a 4-hit game the other day. He launched a couple of home runs in the series. He's not slowing down anytime soon. They just,
if they had American Association pension, I think he'd qualify.
Yes, he would. He would. So everything about Lincoln, and they got enough arms to throw it. You know, they got enough arms that mix it up, and they just signed Jose Ortega, who came in and got a save the other night against Fargo Moorhead. So Lincoln, I think Lincoln's going to be just fine. Cleburne, you know, we talked about Jay Simpson and some of the things they have, and they've got Cleburne. If you're trailing Cleburne, to me, in after the fifth inning, I don't know if you're going to beat him. That pen has been unbelievable. It is just electric. Sioux City, I guess we'll see. We haven't faced them, but, you know, again, familiar names, Lang, Sermo, you can start going through the list. And then the Texas Airhawks. But, you know, we'll see what kind of flying new element Texas can be by the time it's all done. And there sit those Canaries, top of that division. And I'm not scratching my head, but I'm thinking, ooh, okay, I didn't necessarily see it coming. Let's see if it's the state.
You know, you mentioned Texas, and I was watching the game with Fargo and Texas late Saturday night, I believe it was. And maybe you can describe to me what exactly happened with Medina being thrown out of the game.
Yeah, hold on, I'll have my daughters explain. No, I'm just kidding. It's not ready to work out here a little bit. Hey, by the way, if I got to get going soon, I'll tell you, I'm going to be on a spin cycle in 20 minutes. That's not going to work well after that supper. But anyway, here's what happened on that. Yeah, Dad, don't. You guys, Kevin, Rob, we're past our prime on that. I'm not a 20-year-old college student. So Medina's had an 0-for-3 night, and he hits the ball second. It's bang-bang play. And 50-50 call, and I believe Chavez was the umpire at first, and an immediate out call. And as he was calling out, it was quick, Yoshan had already kind of reached up to grab his helmet and slam it down to the ground. Well, he did that not at the out call. He did it because he was 0-for-3. Now he's 0-for-4. This was close. It was a frustration at myself deal. But the problem is...
that's what I thought, too, watching it.
Exactly. That's right. And the problem is, he put the umpire in a tough spot. So what would you guys do? You know, you have to. You have to throw him out. I mean, you kind of, unless you turn around and walk away quickly and pretend you didn't see the, I love Yoshan Medina, fantastic guy, but I think he probably put the ump in a tough spot where he had no choice but to throw him out. And then what Yoshan did, because the clubhouse, as you know, is in that airplane hangar across the way from first base, so you're going diagonal to the clubhouse, and instead of walking around the plate after he got ejected, Yoshan walked across the diamond where, of course, the guys were standing, and that drew a little chatter from a couple of the Air Hawks, and then all of a sudden they had a little standoff thing going on. So I think it was a tough about 3 minutes for Yoshan. I think he had it was unfortunately got tossed because I agree. I think he was more frustrated himself. And the same token probably could have went around the plate to get to the clubhouse as opposed across the pitcher's mound, which you know, those unwritten rules of baseball.
Right. And, Tim Costello on the Texas broadcast made a point of that. And you know what, that no-hitter this week ended on a bunt single. Once again, the unwritten rules are making headlines.
Right, yeah. And if I played for the Yard Goats, I'd fight somebody too. Oh, wait, that's a... I think that was the Track Thunder and the Yard Goats, I believe, that played that double A game. Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's talk about those exciting Sioux Falls Canaries for a moment that are in first place. It has been the big additions that Mike Meyer has made, adding guys like Ale Lago, Adrian Nieto, and Jordan Ebert that have really made the biggest difference for this team.
And Nieto seems to, boy, did he jump. Every time I looked at the box score, Nieto had like three or four hits, and Ale Lago proven, you know, where he's been. And Jordan Ebert, a good two-way guy, can swing it, can play the field, by the way, it's going to come down, hopefully, it's going to come down to pitching and duration. You know, it's probably exciting right now in Sioux Falls camp. I think Mike Meyer's got the great disposition to keep them level-headed. We'll see. You know, they're 18 games into 100, so they're 18% of their season is gone. If we start getting to 40 games deep and Sioux Falls still hanging and guys are still doing, and they played, you know, some of the North Division and hung with and or beat, I would start believing, and I'm not dissing them by any means, but Red Hawks played them in a couple exhibition games, and I thought, oh, well, it's going to be a tough year for Sioux Falls. But all of a sudden, they righted some of the ship, and they got themselves in a division that, not unlike maybe the American League Central in recent years in Major League Baseball, where 500, you know, who knows? Maybe 54 wins could win the South. I don't know what that number is going to be either. But you know, if that's the case, Katie bar the door.
Right, or just get in that number two spot.
Yeah, right. Just get in that two spot. So yeah, Lincoln still scares me. KC's not probably going to go anywhere. Sioux City's, if they were stock, I'd probably buy him now because I'd buy low and expect him to go high. So, and Cleburne, him, back end, Jay Simpson. If you held me against a wall with a pitchfork, like Carl in Caddyshack to the Goonga Galunga pitchfork to the caddy, and forced me to pick who I think is going to win the South, I think right now, having seen Cleburne, having seen Lincoln, having seen Kansas City, now they've lost some, having seen Texas, not having seen Sioux Falls, not having seen Sioux City yet, Cleburne impresses me. Lincoln is dangerous. A lot of runs. They can put so much heat on you offensively early in the game where if you don't match it, you could be in trouble. Cleburne and Lincoln, to me, are scary products in the South. I can't sleep on KC because they'll write that ship. Haven't seen Sioux City or Sioux Falls, but right now, I'd say Cleburne and Lincoln.
You know, Kevin, the surprising part for Sioux Falls, has been the fact that Ryan Flores, which I knew the team was really expecting a lot out of, has really struggled early on.
Yeah, Thursday afternoon he had a particularly rough outing. Came in after Sioux Falls fell down 4-2, and he had a stretch of four consecutive batters got hit by a pitch, and I don't recall that ever happening. And it was obviously nothing intentional. He just doesn't have his command right now. It was mostly breaking pitches that seem to be coming inside on the right-handed hitters. So it's been a rough start of the season for Ryan Flores. But as we all know from last year and the year before, he's been a very solid pitcher in this league.
Jack, how would you call a guy getting four hit by pitches in a row? How about that?
How can these guys not get out of the way of those perfect strikes? Anyway, you mentioned Euchre earlier. I thought, how could they lay off pitches this close? remember the movie The Jerk with Steve Martin?
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorites.
Right. Which comes to my mind is when the guy is trying to snipe him and he's at that gas station and if this guy hates cans.
Stay away from the cans.
Get away from the cans. That's fine. I probably have a Steve Martin reference. This is do my poor Jackie Mason. I do a poor Jackie Mason impersonation, probably. No, I wouldn't. Yeah, that's tough. That's a tough break right there. That four. I don't even know what the record is in baseball for consecutive hit batsmen from a pitcher, but that's got to be getting close.
I have to look that one up.
Gleeman, I'm sure he knows.
Yeah, there you go.
Gleeman knows. I'm sure it doesn't rival. You know, Dirty Al Gallagher, remember, speaking of Kansas City, you know, remember his minor league story? He once wore the same underwear for, what was it, 28 days, Rob? 27 during the
season? Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And
yeah.
That old great line that Dirty Al had, he said, I technically had two streaks going, which is still one of the best lines I've heard of a manager, but anyway.
Moving on to the Cleveland Railroaders, off to kind of a disappointing start, but I did want to mention that Kevin kind of was a little critical of Jesus Sanchez, and then he came out and had a big outing this last weekend.
No, I wasn't critical of Jesus Sanchez. It was just Brad Allred was pumping his tires when we gave Pitcher of the Week to Jake Mathis instead of Sanchez. And of course, it's all good fun. He goes, well, let me tell you guys about Jesus Sanchez. And then he proceeded to get knocked around his next two starts, but he did have a very solid outing against St. Paul last Saturday night and got a win. So, I got nothing against Mr. Sanchez. I was just a little back and forth with me and Mr. Allred, who is a fan of the show. So Jack is going to like the fact that you picked the Railroaders to make the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm going to be really high now in Brad's book over there. By the way, Denning Gehrig, no relation to the great Lou Gehrig, Brad's cohort there in Cleveland, helped me put the life of a Yellow Jacket to end the other day in Cleveland.
Oh, yes, I was going to mention that. I watched that video.
Well, that was poisonous, I'm sure. It carried some kind of venom, but we had to exterminate that. Problem is, it took Denning like 5 swipes with his shoe to get that.
Were you calling that?
Texas.
Were you calling that? Were you like, oh, a swing and a miss by Denning Gehrig?
I should have videoed it. Then my last shot was the Railroaders taking BP, and I said, okay, folks, tonight's first pitch is at 7:06, and we just murdered this Yellow Jacket. But, so he's going to like
too bad you couldn't have. Too bad you couldn't put a graphic on the video. RIP Yellow Jacket 2018-2019.
I'm sure we're surprised we didn't get some kind of message from, well, I don't know if PETA covers that or not, but that's so I'm Cleburne up. I've seen Cleburne, and I liked what I saw, and they played 3 tough games, and their back end just started blowing smoke and throwing, breaking stuff, and then we leave, and Eddie Medina walks there and no hits him. So I just thought, well, okay, you know, go figure.
Let's move on to the Kansas City T-Bones. 2 of their players are signed by affiliate clubs. Kevin Lennox signed by the Boston Red Sox and Eric Stout signed by the Cincinnati Reds. But, boy, this is a team that looks like right now that they've fallen and can't get up.
Whew, man alive. It's and they were finding ways. They jumped out in front of the Hawks one of the games in our series. We had that funky 3 games, then came home for 7 and went back there and played them one time, which was odd. But they had jumped out to a big lead. Red Sox had a fight and tried to claw back, fell down. You know, we had to play a twin bill because the weather's been brutal, certainly in our friends in Kansas and Missouri and all that. But, yeah, and then, you know, Hawks were able to come back and outpitch them in one of the games, and they took a rubber game, you know, 8-1, and then came back last Monday night, and they knocked them all over the park, all over the place, and pitched it. The Red Sox did face Delgado, good arm. Faced Stout, obviously good arm. And then Lennox, the closer, came in, you know, most recently, I think, was in Omaha, guys. They were good, and they were swinging it. They were putting the bat on the ball and driving all over the park, and now they've lost some of those pieces. So it's tough to figure out now. It's tough to project Kansas City. I don't know if I can project them just yet.
That's kind of crazy that 2 years in a row, last year their projected opening night starter got signed before you even had a chance to pitch on opening night. And now this year with Randall Delgado pitches 2 starts and then gets signed by a major league ball club. So you know, if you're a guy that wants to get back in the majors, get signed by Kansas City and make a strong bid to be the opening night starter, you'll be back in no time.
Yeah, it is, and it's also the risk you run. You know, nobody's going to prevent their guys when the affiliated ball comes calling, and Kansas City, they get these great arms and they get these players, and that's the risk that I'm sure you run. And it's always not a running joke, but we have talks going, well, those guys are good, but how long are they going to be, you know, how long are they going to be around? So now we've seen a couple are already gone.
Another team really struggling right at the moment is those Sioux City Explorers, who suffered two huge losses in Winnipeg when they had leads during the week here. Another team that looks like they're doing everything that they did last year to win games. They're just not winning, though.
Yeah, it's odd. It does. It seems like they're running east looking for a sunset, but I don't know how you turn that direction around. And you know what the funny thing is that you just wonder if they stayed a course, if because it's baseball, the script flips and they start, you know, turning that record around by doing the same things that, like what you just said. So I don't know. And Mongo's gonna. He's a good baseball guy. He's a passionate guy. They're just not going to go through the motions. They're going to keep doing their workouts and do it. But, yeah, it'd be one thing if they didn't have, you know, the Sampsons and the Langs and the Sermos and some of the names, but they still have a lot of those names. So, yeah.
Yeah, looking at their stats, they've only got four guys that are hitting above 244. And that would be three of the four guys we're talking about with Lang, Sampson, and Sermo.
Yeah, and we'll be there tomorrow night. I'll be there this weekend, and be a better look-see at what they're all about. I've scratched my head. The last year was phenomenal. I've been part of a couple teams that have had good records. The 98 Red Hawks were just ridiculous. It was just insane how, I think, what was it, 78-22 or something like that? And it was just nuts. It was one of the great teams of Coast and Daryl Motley and some of these guys that pitching, and I looked what Mongo had last year, and I'm thinking, that's what a change, what a difference a year makes, but we'll see.
I remember back in 1998, St. Paul had a walk-off home run by Matt Noakes to win the first round of the playoffs against Schaumburg, and we're all really elated, and then the thought hit us, oh, we got to play Fargo now. And yeah, I remember that was a three-game train wreck. St. Paul wasn't in any of those three games, and it was just foregone conclusion Fargo was going to win it.
It's a great drop, Kev. That's Matt Noakes, man. Once had to land his plane on a highway, did he not?
Yes, that's right. Yes, he did. That's correct.
Yeah, a little engine trouble, and Matt Noakes not only hit the walk-off against Schaumburg later, his wife had to land a plane, a twin engine on a highway just to survive. Oh, that's crazy.
We did want to add, too, that the Texas Air Hogs end their 10-game losing streak, so congratulations to them. And one more important note, going back to Ryan Flores, the Major League record for consecutive hit batters in a row is 3. 9 pitchers have done that in their careers, most recently Javier Vasquez. So just wanted to throw that information out.
Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Congratulations, Ryan.
Nice. Yeah.
So Jack, someone going to send that in to SportsCenter top 10?
Yeah, maybe they need to.
Dubious records. Yeah, nice.
So Jack, tell us what's going to be going on with you in these upcoming weeks.
Upcoming weeks, got a series against Sioux City coming up. Then it's to everybody's favorite CHS Field, where instead of sitting on my peanuts, I can throw them at people at CHS Field. And
great.
Get ready for that. And then it's Rosemont, Illinois, and Chicago, and Impact Field. And looking forward to that. And the Red Hawks finally will return home and play the likes of the Garys and I think Chicago comes to town. And so what's coming up in the front window, I think, is a barometer for the Red Hawks anyway of what they can expect, because the North Division starts playing each other. And then we're going to start maybe seeing a little separation early. And for the Red Hawks, they got to get that rotation. They got to get a couple guys got a tweak here and a tweak there, so they got to get healthier. Got to get that rotation shored up, and should be good to go. And it'll be bus rides and and name games and trivia. That's what's coming up for me.
Awesome.
Well, I think, too, we're going to start seeing after the MLB draft, we're going to see some more players become available to independent teams as Major League ball clubs have to organize all their minor league teams with all the new players coming in that they drafted. So teams that do need rotation help could see some coming through players getting released by their MLB teams.
Yeah, and then on top of that, too, and you know, the cap that American Association has, you know, that everybody wants to be out of the cap. We all wish we could find rookie right-handers just sitting on a tree that could come out and get outs. But you're right, that influx of new blood into affiliated ball might either push out or those that don't get signed or sign undrafted contracts elsewhere, we're going to find in our league, which is good because this league is so awesome, American Association, to be like Braden Hagans, even though that Braden for the Red Hawks, he's been in the bigs before, but to go from Fargo, North Dakota and move to AAA and be a step away from the big leagues, you're pitching in Fargo, North Dakota, and the next day you're in AAA and a step away from the bigs. I mean, come on. That's the great thing I love about this league. We signed a kid named Michael Hope. We have two Hopes now. In Fargo, there's a lot of Hope. Carter Hope and Michael Hope. Michael out of Shippensburg University, rookie right-hander. And here's a great story. He comes in, makes his pro debut in Kansas City, and fans the side. I'm talking middle of the lineup. Fans the side. And you get a Michael Hope, a young Division II kid from Shippensburg, facing a Reggie Abercrombie who's been in the big. This is why I love this league so much. It's really it's fun.
What's going on at the 10th inning stretch there, Kevin?
Well, to kill my time between all the Saints were on this lengthy road trip, I actually got to do a couple of game stories for my local amateur town ball team, the Faribault Lakers. So it was, for me, going to a ballpark at Bell Field where, as a kid, I would spend nights being bat boy, shagging down foul balls for the local Legion team. It was kind of a thrill to sit up in the press box and write a game story and get it published online because our local paper is called the Faribault Daily News. Well, they don't have a lot of news anymore, and it's no longer daily, so my story was first one to come out on both the games I covered. So I'll be back at CHS starting tomorrow night, and Saints will have a tough test in this homestand with Milwaukee and then Fargo coming in. So looking forward to being back in St. Paul.
At Minor League Sports Report, we will still be covering games that are going on around there. We add a new podcast show with manager Gary McClure from the Milwaukee Milkmen, and I'll be leaning on Jim Bennett here in the upcoming days here to be joining as a podcast show as well. And then we will have the Texas AirHogs manager, Chris Bando, who will also be doing a show with me starting next week. So we'll be up to 9 shows in the American Association coming up here by next week. So pretty excited about that. I was going to say I know Jack has been kind to stay on the show with us for almost an hour and a half, but he's got to give us like 2 more minutes so we break Sean Aronson's record for the longest show we've ever had. So you got to give us something.
2 minutes, okay, let's see, 2 minute warning coming up for the show with Jack. Michael?
How about favorite Doug Simonic story?
There we go.
Doug Simonic story, early years, 1996, the players were not completely dressing in Newman Outdoor Field, the upfield wasn't ready, and then what happens is that they're playing Winnipeg, and it's a tight game, and they lose the game, it's a hot day. Andy McCauley is the hitting coach, Jeff Bittiger the pitching coach. They go back to where North Dakota State's clubhouse and locker rooms are, and Doug's sitting back there, and he's beside himself. He just lost to his rival, Winnipeg. And as he's talking and sweating and dirt and all that, he starts taking off his uniforms. Eventually, he's going to shower. Well, he gets down to his BVDs, and he's down to just his underwear. And Andy McCauley, by this time, is just staring at him going, oh, my gosh. And Doug's he's just mad. You know how passionate Simi was. He's taking off his stirrups. He's taking off his socks. He's down to his underwear. And then he takes off his underwear. Now he's stark naked. He doesn't realize what, you know, he's just mad about getting the loss. And Andy now has got big eyes staring at Simi. And Simi now realizes he's sweating. He's worked up such a sweat. He starts wiping his forehead and his face, but of course he's wiping it with the cloth that he has in his hand, but it's not cloth, it's his underwear that he's been wearing all day during the course of a game. And in true Duck Simonic fashion, he realizes what's going on. He looks at Andy, and he said, I'll use a different word than the Duck used. He goes, what, you've never seen a guy wipe his face with his butt before? That's just one of probably 117 I could have. So,
wow, that's quite a story.
I might as well leave you with that story, guys.
Now that's finishing strong.
That is awesome, Jack. We want to thank you for joining us this week. For Kevin Luco
for
Kevin Luco from the 10th inning stretch. I am Rob Panier for the Minor League Sports Report, and we will see you next time on This Week in the Association.